The Gamers Haven Podcast at gamershavenpodcast.com in association with Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com, as well as the Vorpal Network at vorpalnetwork.com, are proud to present Gen Con 2010 coverage.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh! End of line.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. Huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com. Or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
Oh, yeah, we're on.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's that simple.
All right. Name's David Hill. I'm here with my wife, Philomena Young.
We are
writers and developers for an indie game that just released called Machine Zeit. It is a sci-fi horror RPG based on the conventions of movies and games like Dead Space, Event Horizon, Pandorum, Alien, that sort of thing. The sort of haunted house and space thing. Basic premise of the game is the game's set about 100 years from now. It's a very low-tech future. Your characters are people that are in a place that they should not be, being killed by things that they do not understand. You're in a haunted space station where all of the inhabitants of the space station were slaughtered in this weird, like, sort of solar flare type event. And now they're ghosts. Book itself, we've got a lot of really cool names and the writing staff, ourselves, Chuck Windig from White Wolf, Eddie Webb from White Wolf, Jennifer Brozek is our editor, she's outstanding.
Hardest working woman in gaming, so she's everywhere.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of really cool names. The game itself is available at Indie Press Revolution currently, the print version. Drive-Thru RPG. We wanted to do something new as far as like digital stuff goes, because whenever I've seen like PDFs, I really like using them because they're not really formatted for a screen. So instead of doing like a different version of the PDF, what I did is we sell the PDF, but whenever you buy the PDF, you get an HTML5 version. So you can use it like on your iPad or your netbook or whatever, and it just adapts. You can use it on your cell phone.
Nice.
Yeah.
It looks great on the iPad.
It really
very,
does.
Very nice on the iPad.
It's beautiful. So there's that. We're also releasing the game. If you get it at a convention or you get it directly from us, you can get it on a 1 gigabyte custom flash drive with the game's logo. It comes with some of the music that inspired the game. There's a lot of little extras. But basically, the thing about the game, it's like 8 pages of rules in a 150-page book. Very little rules, very narrative control, very very much movie logic. We trust our players to do what is awesome. We figure they know the genre, they know horror, they know what scares them, and they're going to develop that. The game can be played with no prep whatsoever. Whenever you sit down with your players and you make characters, you basically build the premise for the night's game. Two-thirds of the game book is in-character setting and material. It's like newspapers, blogs, all of that shit. And you can print out any given page of the book, hand it to your players, and that is like fodder for inspiration. It's all opinionated. Yeah. There's a lot of holes in it that they have to fill.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's sort of anti-canon because nothing is...
Everything's opinion.
Right.
It's within the setting, and you know,
And that's wrong.
It adds a lot of great flavor to it, really.
Yeah. So there's an air of conspiracy, but who knows? Like, that's up to your players to decide. Mm-hmm. And in the game, depending on the roles that they make and the actions that they take, they get to take control and actually make declarations about the setting and fill in those blanks. So, like, if we talk about a corporation and we don't explicitly say that, you know, they're altruistic or whatever, during the game, if your players, like, find something really weird, they can say, oh, yeah, that's that corporation's fault. I used to work with them whenever I was younger, and I remember from back then that was something that they wanted to cover up because I was on the development team. Yeah. Like, that just comes out of the blue.
Right. I was talking to one of the guys at the booth yesterday, and... he told me about that, and the thing that I thought was interesting, Ethan and I talked a lot about SGMs not wanting to lose complete narrative control.
Right.
But the way that it works in Machine's Eye is it's the number of successes you get, you know, above your target are the number of little bits you can add to whatever you're doing.
So exactly.
It gives enough narrative control to the player.
It's a bit more collaborative type thing rather than a player taking control, and that's what I have an issue with.
It's very, it's structured, but it's like sitting around a campfire with a structure.
Right.
And when I run it, like I run it a little bit different than some people run it, but when I run it, I end up like after about 10-15 minutes of gaming, sitting back and watching. I just watch what
develops.
And
that's a great feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
When that happens organically in a game, that's wonderful.
We've run it without a GM. There's some guidelines and ideas for running it without a GM. And because the nature of the system basically benefits people from doing ballsy things, and whenever you do those ballsy things, you get to take more control of the story.
Right.
And we found, like, we don't even need to tell players. We don't need to tell them, screw yourself over, do bad things. Like, we don't need to reward them for that because they'll do it. Players will out, basically.
And every time they go, I'm going to do this, one of my conditions, I'm going to do this terrible thing to my own character.
Yeah.
It's never come up that we'd had to say, try to stop winning so much. It's never happened that way.
We talk to people who have never played a role-playing game before. We explain to them the way that it works. We sit down, we make characters, we start playing, and then 10-15 minutes in, you know, they get
somebody
a little conditioned.
Loses a hand.
we're telling them, okay, so you can do all this awesome stuff, and then so we're like, what do you want to do? And they describe their action, they do all this crap, and then their last condition that they get to declare, they're like, we hear a child crying in the distance.
Right.
Like, dude, the game worked.
Very cool.
And I mean, it depends on your GM style. You can take as much control or as little as you want, because when you're rolling, you're also getting narrative control with your rolls. So if your monster rolls well, you can take back a lot of what's happened. As long as you're not changing anything that's true already.
Yeah. Basically, anything that has not been stated is fair game.
So it's for the GM side of it, if you want more control, you just roll the dice more.
Yeah.
And from the player side of it, you want more control, you roll the dice more.
Yeah, it sounds like the interesting aspects of something like the pay system without the, oh my god, where did the story go?
Right.
That can't happen with a system like that. So very cool.
Well, the thing that helps with keeping it from being, oh my god, where the story go, is that you're stuck in a station.
That's true.
There's the claustrophobia. Yeah. There's only so far you can go.
Yeah.
You put down the map of what the station looks like, that's where they are.
Yeah, when I was designing it, I literally, what I did is I thought about what I like from, like, traditional
games, what I like about story games, and then I just wrote it from the ground up. I took the things I like. I like the idea of an enclosed dungeon. I like the tension of having rooms where you know there's going to be an encounter in a room, and the hallway is going to be your tension, you're running away, or it's your respite, your sanctuary. Right. I don't really like the clunky rule stuff. It just doesn't really do it for me. So I abolished it, but I still took the dungeon model.
Right.
And then from the story side of it, I like the idea of being able to tell a story with your players, but I like giving them enough structure that it encourages that to happen, and it sort of coaxes it out of them. Every time we've played the game probably about 50, 60 times with playtesters and stuff, every time they eat it up, like they take it and run with it. We don't need to explain it, they just do it. Mm-hmm. So that tells me that we've done something right.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk
to us. Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll see you in the future.
Absolutely. Right,
thank you.
I didn't say anything profane, so...
No, you're good. You're good. Even if you did, I don't really care.
I try to like concerted effort. I'm cussed like a sailor, but when it comes to anything printed, I don't ever use profanity in any of our stuff.
Fair enough. All right, well, official introduction. I'm here with Sean Preston, president, CEO, head, whatever, of Reality Blurs.
Chief Bottle Watcher.
That'll work, too.
And I'm here with Tracy Barnett.
Of Troll in the Corner Games.
That's right. I was getting there.
All right. So, yeah, you guys have, like, a ton of stuff going on. Obviously, Rome's Cthulhu is doing real well for you, but the big news is Iron Dynasty, right?
Yes, it's been in development for 4.5 years.
Nice.
It went through 2 years of playtesting, and after the first year, I had to deconstruct it and rebuild it from scratch, because I had just wrapped up Runepunk, and Runepunk had a lot of versatility, and then Iron Dynasty was more stripped down, but people wanted the extra versatility, so I had to reintroduce all that. So it was going back to formula. I always thought of the Green Goblin from Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So back to formula. That's what we did.
Now, I know that that Runepunk uses Savage Worlds Design Dynasty, Savage Worlds product as well, or is it its own system?
It's a Savage Worlds product.
Awesome. I'm hugely behind Savage Worlds products. I love using that system. So what's the setting of Iron Dynasty like?
If I was going to distill it down into two words, it would be Samurai Steampunk, which was what the project's working name was originally.
Nice.
And it was actually something I conceived back in 2004.
Okay.
I had all the stuff that we're developing now came from this project plan from back then.
So you guys have like a three-headed monster right now, I mean, with the three Savage Worlds products. Are you guys doing anything else for any other systems?
We're also developing Iron Dynasty for Fantasy Craft. That should be out in the spring. That's already way in development.
Nice.
And we'll probably be doing a Fate version. So you got the scoop on that. This is
saying
right here. Exclusive. I've already done the conversion.
Okay.
I'm just banging the tires.
Now, that's a really different beast than Savage Worlds is. Like, how are you finding it with the, you having the aspects and all of that? How's that working in with the...
It plays really, really well with the archetypes,
because
the archetypes really encompass that. And the guys, I've had some of the guys that are very loyal Savage Worlds players, which I love Savage Worlds, but Fate's a different dynamic.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I try to do that you should see, is that when we go into other systems like Fantasy Craft or Fate, is we make sure we're not stepping on the toes. It's a different demographic, different audience.
It definitely is.
And some of the guys found it very liberating to play Iron Dynasty in the Fate.
Nice. System. Very cool. So is there anything else you want to let people know about while I've got you here? Or?
Sure. That Iron Dynasty is a monster of a book, but you're saying it's 276 pages of goodness. It's balanced. It's got, for the people that love the Savage Worlds, it's got over 80 edges. You can develop your own fighting styles. You can play any kind of character that you can envision in any Oriental game.
Very cool.
Whether it's, if you wanted to extricate the magic and the tech, then you could play straight Sengoku era Japanese stuff. Lone Wolf and Cub all the way to Avatar The Last Airbender.
Nice.
So everybody listen to Troll in the Corner, and thank you for your time. Rock on Gen Con.
All right, thanks, Sean.
Transcribe these, right?
Nope.
Oh.
I post the audio live.
Oh, all right. So we have to be on our game.
No cursing.
No cursing. Okay.
So I'm here with Patrick Capera and Alexander Flagg from Crafty Games. And how are you guys doing?
Good, good.
Great.
About T-minus 30 to the show starts.
Yeah, so. Till things really kick off and this building gets flooded. So,
yeah.
So I know you guys have had Spycraft out for a little while now.
Right, 5 years.
Yeah, and Fantasycraft just launched recently, right?
Last year, yeah.
Last year. So why don't you tell me a little bit about what you guys have going on?
We're selling our second book here, Fantasycraft of the show, Time of Pi Adventure, and we'll have a couple more coming in the later in the year. And the next year, we're going to be rolling out a new edition of Spycraft.
Okay.
So it's the third edition of Spycraft.
The other books for Fantasycraft this year, we're doing the Adventure Companion, which is our first three settings, including Cloak and Dagger, which is a Greco-Roman high fantasy setting.
Nice.
Epic, which is a world's iced over, demons are running the earth, Conan love song.
Yeah.
And Sun Chaser, yeah, which is a river delta adventure with lots of high cliff style dungeons.
It's kind of like Lord of the Rings on the Mississippi.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
I like that with the way that sounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that'll have a huge rules expansion in it, and then we're also doing Spellbound, which is our it's a compilation of all the spells that are both in the core book and that we've designed since then. It's 888 spells plus dozen classes.
Yeah, at least a dozen classes.
Okay.
Working that out. So.
And then more stuff next year. And as he says, Spycraft 3rd and 10,000 Bullets early next year.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, we're doing an open playtest actually of Spycraft.
What is what's 10,000 Bullets?
10,000 Bullets is an urban crime setting, so it's kind of like, I'm a big fan of crime movies, 70s films, stuff like that,
yeah.
But it's more of a modern thing, kind of like Grand Theft Auto, except you're putting players in a position where they can kind of guide the course of the city, build their own little criminal enterprises, or they can be cops, they can go out and kick the gang's asses. So it's a really kind of a modular, meta-American city with all the rules for kind of gritty urban crime gaming.
Okay.
All in once using our Mastercraft system. Like,
okay.
It'll be compatible with Spycraft and Fantasycraft.
Okay. And for those that aren't familiar, can you tell us a little bit about the craft system and what makes it different from some of the other game systems out there?
Absolutely. It's an offshoot of 3.0.
Okay.
We diverged at that point. And
back in 2002.
Yeah.
So early on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's now three or four steps removed.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
It's pretty fast. We've streamlined a lot of the rules.
Okay.
We have an action dice, which is a mechanic that we introduced back in 2002.
Okay.
Basically every character has a number of dice that they can add to rolls and use to activate criticals. So you never wind up in a situation where the GM will accidentally kill a character with a critical because he has to decide to do it.
Okay.
There's a lot of narrative control elements with action dice. You can spend them for improvised weapons.
Sure. Yeah, kind of dramatic editing.
Cheating decks.
Yeah, things
like that.
So.
Our classes are really robust. We make sure that everybody gets new abilities at every single level.
Nice.
We got a skills play a really heavy part in it, so it's a little more driven by that. And we've tried to take some of the core D20 elements and strip them down so much as scale them back, make them
sure.
A little more easier to apply on the fly.
Right. Like a lot of the games out there, we've decided that we're going to, acrobatics covers many different activities,
yeah.
so that the skills are actually balanced against one another.
Mm-hmm.
You're not having a situation where you're spending a bunch of skill points on a skill that you're only going to use in a very narrow number of circumstances.
There's level adjustment stuff. Like, we've got Drake, so you're playable dragon race in actual wings, claws, the whole thing.
And fire breath, yeah.
And you can play at first level, that sort of stuff.
Constructs at first level and...
Ogres,
yeah.
Giants,
And we've got a bunch more of those coming next year, too.
Yeah, excellent.
But the really big thing that Mastercraft does that most games don't do is that it's all about your game. The core book doesn't have a rule, a default setting, and it's all about tailoring the rule set to just what you want. There's a lot of optional rules. There's lots of bells and whistles and little toggles.
Yeah. Campaign qualities, which is your kind of shape. So if you want a grittier game, you can. If you don't want magic in the game, you can take it out. It doesn't break any other pieces of the game. If you don't want divinity in the game, you can strip that out. You
right.
can define how gods work and how and
or don't.
Yeah, yeah, stuff. Yeah, exactly. So you can have priests that are secular, that don't have magical powers, or you know, whatever.
We're taking that even further in SpyCraft Third, actually. There's we're going to have alternate combat styles in that, because one of the things that we learned over the last two editions of the game is that some people want to play high-action James Bond stuff, mm-hmm. and other people want to play old-school, like Le Carré-style action.
Right.
And so we're going to have in the same book the option to do both of those and have for the rules actually feel different.
Nice. Yeah. So, yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you guys very much, and we'll look forward to seeing more from you guys in the future. Great.
Thanks.
So Inferno has several different pieces. First, you've got social networking, then you've got gameplay tools, and then you've got a virtual game table. So the social networking aspect of the site is what you might expect from something like Facebook, except it's for gamers. So now you've got all of these fine people are in here, and they've got their social networking profile as, hey, look at me, I'm a gamer.
I exactly agree, because as soon as you go on for a thread that you've seen, you're also involved in whatever chat's going on.
I don't like talking to people.
It's not for you. That's the unsocial networking, and that's fine.
Nice.
So, I mean,
so you got all the stuff that you can expect. Sorry, you're
okay, asking. Okay, can you tie it to your Facebook profile and get all the people on your Facebook profile?
Not yet. Okay. Not yet, but that, you know, we're looking at some kind of API integration. Now, you can do all the stuff that you expect to be able to do with social networking. You upload photo albums, you know, you comment on each other's pages, you send mail, you do all that kind of stuff. So get to know your gamers.
Right.
Now, you also have social networking in other fun ways. Like your characters have their own social networking profile.
Okay, got it, got it.
So the first thing that you see is you're going to see...
I'm okay talking to people in character.
Yeah, I think so. Let me pull this guy up. So you've got a social networking profile is the first thing that you see. So it's all of those fun details that you make up about your character that don't have any place to live. Well, gosh, now I got a bunch of stuff on.
Oh, you mean not only do I have to hear people rattle this off to me at Gen Con, let me tell you about my character, I've got to see it online now, too.
But only if you want to.
That's
entirely voluntary.
That's really awesome.
Now, every character has a blog, and it's full-functional blogging. We're talking rich text. We're talking you can upload images, all that kind of stuff. And the blog posts, blogging in character.
This would have been so cool for our campaign, where we were blogging on the Sinister Adventure boards, just what was going on.
Yeah.
So this would be perfect.
And we did it all in character, so...
The game profile, I'll show you in a minute, also has a blog so the GM can keep a blog and throw out in-game news stuff. And the game profile aggregates the most recent blog posts of all the characters that are in the game. So on that one game profile, you get a whole batch of information. You don't have to do the thing of, where were we? Log on 5 minutes early and just read where the hell you were, and you're back into the game. You just rescued the first 15, 20 minutes of your game.
You have to actually have gamers who read, right?
Well, that's kind of important for the hobby, right? You'd like to think. So, you also have...
I think you're biased against the illiterate.
I'm a writer. All right, so you've also got a character sheet. Inferno has a generic character entry system, which means that you can get any character from any game in. Now, with our publishing partnerships, you're going to start seeing templates for your favorite games.
That's great.
All right, so you just hit that, fill it in with what you need to fill it in with, you're good. You got a notepad, so you can keep public and private information. Private notepad, nobody gets to see, so that's where you keep all your dark secrets and your evil plans. Public is just keep all your game notes. It's browser-based, no install, anywhere where you can get to a computer, on an internet connection. So you'll never lose your character sheet again. You won't misplace your game notes. All that stuff is stored in the system. Yes, you can. We've actually talked to people who meet face-to-face, and they've used Inferno at the table for tracking everything. Now, game profiles have all the information you need about your game. So if you're running a publisher demo, like our friends at Mindstorm are going to be doing, you're logging all the information to attract players. Now,
these guys are great.
Yeah, they're super cool.
I like them, and I like their stuff.
Yeah, they make good product. Please. But obviously we like the big fish.
Who are you podcasting on?
Troll in the Corner.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Now, here's your game table. So you get a game table that's a part of every game profile. So you have your instance. You never need to clean it up. So you can leave all your gaming information in there, and you're good. Now, as you can see, you got video, voice, text. Chat window is also a die roller. So I want to get in there. Standard gamer notation, 1d20, boom. Gives me my result. If you roll multiple dice, it gives you each individual die roll as well as the total aggregation. You have a shape store, so you can bring in shapes, move them around, make maps on the fly. You can bring in images, any JPEG or PNG, so you can bring your map in, move pieces around on it, track all your combat.
Tablet support?
What was that?
Tablet support.
You mean like tablet PC?
Yeah. Or if I like have a Wacom tablet and I'm...
If your Wacom tablet's going to talk to your browser, it'll work.
Okay.
Because you have drawing tools. Yeah, you got freehand drawing.
I've got a tablet PC, so the same thing. It'd be the mouse interface,
right.
You're just using your pen for the mouse.
Yeah. You've got freehand drawing tools if you want to do stuff. You can label everything. So that little character that's rolling around, you can attach a tag to him that's got his hit points on it, all that kind of business.
How long has it been since you went live with this stuff?
Hour?
Oh, really?
Yeah, about 34 minutes. Yeah,
this is it.
We got about 1,200 people in the system from the last couple of weeks because of the blasts that went out of the Gen Con list.
That's why I signed on.
Beauty. So we're like,
yeah.
The deal?
Yeah.
I've got a list. I'll have more tomorrow. Right now, it's $5 off Fantasy Craft, 10% off anything for Heavy Gear Blitz, $1 off at the Hero Labs booth, and something at the same store. Which I'll have. But tomorrow, I'll have more deals. We're talking about it. So if you want to come back, I'll get you the rest of the list tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. So cool. And you also have vendors participating now with Inferno, our publishing partners. So you can actually... I just can't see the mouse right now. There we go. So you can actually go and socially network with companies.
Cool.
So you've got vendor profiles.
Yeah, and just so everyone who's listening to this can see, we're talking like Reality Blurs, Crafty Games, Cubicle 7, Wildfire, Burning Wheel, Mindstorm, Hero Games, Sandstorm, AG. I mean, like... The games you want to play, yeah. No Grain Press is in there. This is awesome.
So you also got product catalogs in here. We got the publishers have links to their free stuff. Mm-hmm. You can click through and buy PDFs.
Now, I heard you mention with the discounts and stuff, I heard you mention Fantasy Grounds. I heard you mention...
Fantasy Craft.
I heard you mention Hero Lab.
I didn't say Hero Lab, but I know where you're going with that.
Is there integration with those?
We are talking with Rob at the show for integration so that you can use Hero Lab to build your character and then kick it out to him.
Awesome.
So we are talking with people like him as well as Pro Fantasy,
the
cartographer, so that we can partner with other people who are doing awesome stuff in the electronic space already. And,
there's no reason to reinvent the wheel.
Exactly. So that's a rundown of the system. You also have forums, of course, so that you can get on there and just talk to people or try to find folks that are interested in the same games as you if you don't want to troll the social network.
But, awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, well, very cool. Thank you for talking about this.
Absolutely.
I am here with Jess of Geeky Queen.
Hello.
Tell me about who you are and what you guys do.
Well, we are based out of Indianapolis, so we just happen to be located right next to the biggest convention in the country, so it's pretty handy. But what we do is we make soap for gamers and gamer appreciators, and our goal is to fight Kong funk and get rid of the gamer stank.
Yes, because as we all have experienced at one time or another,
yeah.
It can get interesting.
Yeah, friends don't let friends play dirty. That's our motto.
So what kind of soaps do you offer?
We like to take stuff from games that we actually play. So we like Dungeons & Dragons, so we have Cure Light Wounds Peppermint Soap.
Nice.
We have Mana Bars, we have Health Bars, we have a Barbarian Scrub for the really dirty gamer with the really thick grind.
Yeah.
Bar Trek, Stargate Soap, I mean, you name it.
Nice. Do I see a phone booth over there?
Yes, we do have a Doctor Who TARDIS.
Given the launch of the RPG
RPG that's not a...
Yes.
So what's your favorite scent?
You know what, my favorite is Tetris.
Okay.
It's a cherry lemonade scent, which might change in the future. They stopped making the scent. But
you know,
I actually make little Tetris shapes out of soap, and when I'm making the soap, I actually hum the Tetris theme to myself, and I get to play Tetris
with the... Which one of the three?
Oh, that third one, C.
I can't remember. The slow one?
Yes.
The waltz one?
Yes, yes.
That's very cool. And do I see 20-sided dice in some of these
soaps?
Yes.
We like to provide an incentive for our gamers to bathe, so we put a 20-sided dice in some. Some have D10s, D12s. Either way, they have to work to get it.
Critical practice.
And it drops loot. So yeah, it's the perfect item for any gamer.
So how long have you guys been doing this?
We've been doing it for about a year and a half.
Cool.
And we had the tweet heard around the world about 3 months in. Will Wheaton mentioned us on his Twitter feed.
And ever
since then, it's kind of just exploded. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, you guys are obviously going to be at Gen Con, the rest of the convention.
Yep.
This isn't going to go up until after the convention, mm-hmm. So what do you want folks to know post-Gen Con?
Well, you can find us on geekyclean.com. You can also follow me on Twitter on @geekyclean.
Which you should. She's fun to follow.
I talk a lot, but it's usually gamer-related. Another thing is, if you really want to, you can use GenCon15 as a promo code on the website, and that's through September 30th, and you get 15% off your order.
All right, excellent. Well, Jess, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And have a great convention.
All right, thanks.
I'm here with Brennan Taylor, author of How We Came to Live Here, and I'm sure other RPG...
I wrote a game called Mortal Coil also.
Okay.
And I'm working on... I had published a D20 game called Bulldog, which is a sci-fi action-adventure game.
Okay.
That's out of print, but I'm working on a new Fate version of that, which I'm hoping to release next year.
Okay.
So
for those who aren't familiar, tell us a little bit about yourself, your gaming history, that kind of thing.
Sure. I've been designing games since like the mid-90s.
Okay.
I had I personally called my Fantasy Heartbreaker, that it was the initial game that I created.
Yeah.
And then in like 2004, I released Bulldogs, which was my second game.
Okay.
And that was a lot more successful because I kind of knew what I was doing at that point.
Yeah, the first one can, unless you just hit it out of the park for, you know, that weird combination of luck and skill.
Yeah. And you know, it was your typical fantasy game, you know, and those are really hard to market. So there's a lot of them out there.
A lot of them, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like trying to release a fantasy MMO that's not World of Warcraft.
Exactly, right. Yeah. Unless you've got like a Lord of the Rings license, it's not going to work out.
Unless you've got some huge IP behind you.
Yeah, and so now in 2004, I also started Indie Press Revolution with a partner who was another D20 publisher, and we built that up to where we are today,
awesome.
Which is a pretty big online store.
Yeah.
And I just recently this summer sold my share in the company. I no longer am.
Okay.
I'm still a minority owner, but I'm not the majority owner anymore.
Okay.
Which is nice because I really didn't get to design many games when I was running IPR. I was just too busy.
Yeah, because the business side of things and the design side of things are two different beasts.
Absolutely. And IPR got to a size where I just required a lot of attention.
I can imagine. I ran into IPR at Origins.
Right.
That's where I picked up my copy of Red.
Right.
I don't think I got my copy of Burning Wheel there. But, yeah, I mean, to have a vendor that can work with multiple different companies to put out these indie games.
Sure.
Is really cool.
And especially working with companies that might like have produced only one game,
mm-hmm.
Because most companies, that's just too small scale for them to deal with. And the goal I had was to sort of make a way that for people to be able to do fulfillment, to get their game into retail stores and to get their game on a destination site online. So that, you know, they'll sell more copies.
Yeah, and because you can walk around a convention like this and you can hear about, like, there'll be a buzz.
There'll be
that game that everyone wants to hear about, and the person who made it sells it at the convention, and post-convention, how do you know how to find it? Are they out of stock on the website? But having a distributor,
you know, like IPR,
right,
really
exactly.
help a lot.
Right, and really, you know, when I founded it, it was just because I was looking for this service and nobody was providing it.
Yeah.
So I was like, sure, I'll do that. And then, of course, you know, it pretty much shut me out of game design for a while.
Yeah. Well, now that you're back in, you've got How We Came to Live Here.
Right.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that again?
How We Came to Live Here is a Southwest Native American fantasy. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's sort of like a fantasy Anasazi culture.
Okay.
And the idea of the game is that in the setting, the people have crawled up from the worlds below into the fifth world, which is this current world, which was inhabited by monsters.
Okay.
And they've gradually, like, carved out a place for themselves. They've built an area where they're with their lands, their villages in, and they've fought the monsters off. And you're playing a hero from one of these villages, and you have to, the point of the game is you have to sort of navigate between fighting off the outside threats and dealing with the things that are going on inside the village, right. All the relationships, all of the tensions that occur inside a small village,
okay.
And also trying to achieve your own ambitions. The way that the system works mechanically is that you have a finite set of resources, but when you run out, you can always get more if you're willing to commit crimes.
Okay.
But crimes cause spiritual corruption to accumulate on your character, which then causes worse things to happen to you long term.
Right.
So you sort of have to try and balance how far you're willing to transgress in order to get what you want.
Yeah. And I read a little bit of the intro. You are obviously not of Native American descent.
No.
What drew you to this kind of...
Well, I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, and I was always really interested in the mythology of that region. And one of the things is, you know, we were just talking about fantasy worlds. Well, this is a fantasy, but it's not competing against Dungeons and Dragons
it's
and things like that.
It's not a European fantasy.
Right, exactly. And I feel like there should be more non-European fantasy out there just because there's so many interesting things from different cultures across the world that are just, you know, they're not really examined in a lot of role-playing games.
Yeah.
You don't have the opportunity to play those kinds of settings. And so I wanted to create something that was unique, you know?
Yeah.
So
now, I'll admit, when I was reading through the intro of the first few pages, and sort of the world was sort of settling on my brain.
Right.
It's kind of a mind job when you're coming from that Tolkien-esque background. How do you sort of not sell that to people, but how, I mean, what's that learning process like?
Well, that's why there's a lot of setting information in the in the book. You know, the first, I don't know, half of the book is like all setting, talking about the culture, talking about how they set up their households, what their religions are like, you know, that kind of thing.
Cool.
And also I wrote five short stories that are in the style of a folktale.
That's really helpful.
Yeah, and that
kind of stuff. That, for me, that's what will take me into some places, if I can read how someone else is acting within the concept.
Right, so. Exactly. And so that's all there to try and help people, you know, dig into the world. And you know, not everybody who's playing at the table necessarily needs to have all that background.
Right.
But one person should, because that person can then, like, you know, when stuff is coming up, they can give the little details about the culture that are in the book, and that helps sort of build the world up for everyone.
Awesome. So you said you're also working on another Fate project?
Yes.
As well?
Yeah. This is called Bulldogs.
Okay. Yeah. The conversion, right?
Yeah. And it's the tagline for that is sci-fi that kicks ass.
Nice.
It is sort of like, I would say, rough and tumble, edge of the law type characters jetting around the galaxy in spaceships and just getting into trouble.
So. With the, I mean, we've seen the sort of that big D20 surge that happened,
right.
And then the drop off, but now, sort of in the GSL era, fourth edition, there are a lot of D20 based properties, like Masterminds and Pathfinder, that are doing really well. What prompted you to not want to change the Fate system?
Well, you know, Bulldogs was never a really good fit for D20.
Okay.
It's a little more of a sort of high action, you know, even a little bit goofy action.
Okay.
And the problem with D20 that I had is the leveling system just seemed a little restrictive for the feel of the game.
Sure.
Right? It's much more freewheeling, and Fate is a nice freewheeling system, and so that actually works pretty well for it. So.
All right. Well, is there anything else you want to make sure people know about while we got you here?
No, I think that covers all the stuff that I'm doing. So.
All right, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, then check out Indie Press Revolution and make sure you take a look at How We Came to Live Here.
I will also mention the name of my publishing company is Galileo Games.
All right.
And
awesome.
You can find that online, galileogames.com.
Cool. Well, Brandon, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm here with Lauren Coleman of Catalyst Game Labs, and I have in my hand an advanced copy of a book called Star Challengers Moonbase Crisis. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Star Challengers, the book for middle grade readers, 8 to 14. It is science fiction, and other than one little piece of magic fiction we put in there to get the adventure rolling, everything, once the kids get on their adventure, is completely scientifically accurate. The idea is that these books will both be fun to read and will help encourage kids toward math and sciences and maybe even space exploration.
Awesome.
It's promoted by we're doing this in partnership with the Challenger Center. The Challenger Center Foundation's goal is to help basically create enthusiasm for the next generation of space pioneers.
Awesome.
It's a great foundation. We're happy to be part of this.
Yeah.
We got a couple of New York Times bestselling writers to work with us, Kevin J. Anderson and Rebecca Mesta.
Uh-huh.
They're writing the fiction. And the Challenger Center and the NASA people that they know can help us look over it, make sure that we're getting everything exactly right.
Yeah.
It's really exciting. It's both entertaining and important.
Yeah, it looks absolutely excellent. Like the names I'm seeing here for the endorsements, I'm seeing Sally Ride, I'm seeing Neil deGrasse Tyson, Barbara Morgan, Lee Greenwood, I mean, John Glenn, Colin Powell.
President Bush,
yeah,
Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah.
The Challenger Center has a lot of friends. They're doing really good work, and a lot of people really support them. And they're supporting this book. In fact, Neil Armstrong, who doesn't do much in the way of blurbs very often,
right,
gave us a cover quote.
Yeah, and it's the next best thing to being there.
Next best thing to being there.
That's pretty high praise.
Yes, he's a very good guy.
He would know.
Yes, he would. Awesome. Well, I will be reading this, and I'll put the information up on the website. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Coming out the end of October.
Okay.
The end of September.
Even better.
And it's got the obviously beautiful, gorgeous components here with the two different styles of wood chits and the high-quality board.
Mm-hmm. Purpose of
this game, in a nutshell, is laugh your ass off while you get your strategy on. This is a thoroughly in-depth, highly strategic board game with streamlined, fast rules and absolute utter hilarity.
Awesome.
So hilarity comes in, so you own a company and your goal is to be global domination.
Okay.
So you want to be the first guy to $1 billion.
Awesome.
To do that, you're going to buy companies, trade companies, sell companies, make companies public, etc. These are the 36 companies. There's six each in six different industries and six different regions of the world.
Yamaha Motors, Si Senor,
Stalin Airplanes from Russia,
G'day Media, Nuclear This.
All puns intended.
Yes.
One of my favorites here is Finished Products. The name itself isn't that great, but when you read the description, Finished Products doesn't start anything. It finishes them. At least that's what President and CEO Magnus Stephenson Jr. claims about his company. No one actually knows what his cryptic message means, but that's to be expected from such a mysterious company. These are all written like that. There's one in here that is one of my absolute favorites. I'm going to let you read this one.
Okay.
It's written in perfect English.
Super Happy Long Time Technology Company. Super Happy Long Time make high quality product for your good life. Only Super Happy Long Time get very nice merchandise for low price. Super Happy Long Time brings smile to face and honor to family.
These are the companies you're competing over. And so there's a lot of ways to get to $1 billion. Each company that you own is, of course, worth money.
Right.
But more than that, and they make money at each round. You actually earn money on their profits.
Okay.
But here's the scoring card. These are the power combinations. So there's a whole lot of different ways to earn extra money, and they're all completely different strategies. Some of them are regional dominance.
Uh-huh.
Some of them are more diversification-oriented, etc.
Business
done. Very exciting game.
That seems very, very cool.
With these ridiculously high-level leading components, what would you guess the MSRP is?
I would guess it's going to be at least a $45 game.
$39.95.
Not bad. Very cool. That's a good price for. And I'm looking at some pretty high-quality stuff here. So. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for telling us about globalization.
Thank you for listening.
This is
Thunder Hamsters in the Temple of Cheese,
okay,
where you have a bunch of hamster heroes who are going to run into the temple to find the cheeses and steal things.
That sounds like a great plan.
Now, the game ends when all five cheeses are removed.
Okay.
Now, along the way, they're going to fall into holes, go into prison, find magic items, fight Uber Rat guards.
If hamsters were trying to steal my cheese, I would do all of that.
Exactly. Now, what's different about this game from a lot of other games mm-hmm. is when you find, say, a ring, you then get to make a little story up about what magic it does. And you pick another player to give you a, quote, reality check, end
okay.
quote. And they tell you what you have to roll on either a six-sided die or two six-sided dice. And if you roll it, then it becomes a fact. If
okay.
you fail, it didn't happen.
Right.
So the story builds up. But what happens in this game is you're literally writing special rules for that play session.
So it's like Calvin Ball with a structure around it. You remember the Calvin Hobbes comic mm-hmm. where the game was basically make up whatever you want, but this gives you a platform from which to do that.
Exactly.
Cool.
Exactly. So it is a self-amending game.
Nice.
Which means it plays differently every time.
Right. Awesome. Well, cool. Yeah, we'll be checking this out, and I'll let you know as soon as the coverage gets up.
So now you have microphones in your face. Well, technically they're microphones.
I deny all accusations made against me.
Okay. Well, this is Ethan with the Gamers Haven Podcast. I'm here with, of course, Tracy Barnett.
From Troll in the Corner.
And we're here with Mr.
Chris De La Rosa.
Chris De La Rosa from Hunter's Books and Apparel. Thank you very much.
We're standing
drawing blanks here.
We're standing here outside
Sunday.
Of the booth looking at the beautiful cover art on the book Outbreak Undead. Mm-hmm. And Chris, you're the lead developer of this?
I'm the lead developer. I co-developed it with Robert Watts and Ivan Van Norman. It's a zombie survival RPG. It works with a percentile system.
Awesome. I understand that there is a something built into this system to
yes.
so that you sort of jump into the game yourself.
Yeah. We're very proud of this little thing. Is that we're if we're building ourselves as a simulation, which we are, we took a lot of did a lot of research to make sure we covered a lot of bases, and not only just zombie lore, but actually we talked to search and rescue, medical personnel, city planners, et cetera,
to
see if we can make sure get this as accurate as possible. We also have the ability to have yourself made into a character with our Spew AI test, which spins with strength, perception, empathy, will, assessment, inventory. My background is actually in psychology, so I pulled some resources from there and actually made this legit. And we still are in beta. We have a lot more. So we need to have a larger sample size to start making this normalized, making sure it's still accurate. And we're going to add to it all the time, to include factors of height, weight, gender for normalization purposes within those categories.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's always changing. It's a growing project, but it's in beta now. You can take it for free on our website, outbreakundead.com.
So when you played yourself in the game, how'd that go for you?
I was a little surprised. I had pretty high perception. My empathy was a lot lower than I thought it would be.
Well, you're a game designer. That sort of goes there.
I shouldn't have been surprised, I suppose.
You wrote a zombie game. Your empathy has got to be kind of low. Sorry.
Well, yeah, I guess. You know what? You're right.
Exactly.
I really. Well, what was I thinking? Anyway.
I know.
But, we did the whole layout. It's like a survivor journal, and we've done consistent, had the consistent design philosophy the whole way through, and turned out really good, I think. Yeah.
Awesome, yeah. And you guys are self-publishing this, right?
Yes. We're talking with distributors and other people here to kind of partner with, and we've got a lot of good reception. We're just trying to figure out who we're supposed to go with, or who would be the best fit for us.
Sure, yeah, for sure.
Now, this game, the Outbreak Undead, from what we were told yesterday, what it is it doesn't really have a setting in and of itself. itself, or it's a multi-genre type of thing?
Yeah. The thing took 3.5 years to make.
Yeah.
Reason being, we had a lot of ground to cover. Mm-hmm. The biggest gripe I had with existing zombie games is that they kind of conform you to one kind of zombie.
Right.
And we don't want to tell you how to play or what zombies to play. We just tell you like how you play certain kinds, mm-hmm. and even give you a toolkit, kind of customize your own zombie based on what you want to play against. So you can pretty much mimic any example in zombie lore, given the parameters we have in the book. But we'll have multiple settings for any place. So we're basically allowing the players to like take a map of their hometown if they want, and just kind of turn into a zombie-infested nightmare. Our future supplements will also be regional.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get locals from the area to actually write it, so we don't resort to stereotypes.
Nice.
Sure.
We have one that's our next one will be in the Los Angeles area, because that's the one we are familiar with, because we're based in Los Angeles. So,
okay.
That will be coming soon, as we'll be doing PDF supplements on our website periodically too.
Awesome, man. Is there anything else you want to make sure people know about the book or what's going on?
I mean, it's available now. We have the first run. We still have some for our first run, so I don't know when we'll be doing another, so it depends on who we're working with, so you can pick your copy up at OutbreakUndead.com.
OutbreakUndead.com, and obviously if you said you're talking to distributors and whatnot, so hopefully soon you'll be able to, from the local game store, might be able to pick it up too. So.
We have a few stores coming to buy directly, but so it might be in a few, but... I mean, shotgun. See what happens. But
if a retailer wants to get in touch with you, go to your website.
Our contact info is on there if you want to talk to us directly.
Excellent.
Any questions?
I think we're wrapped up.
I think we're good there.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for talking.
Yeah, thank you.
You paying attention now?
Yes.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking
about. Hey, we do know what we're talking about. You know, we called the whole Hugo Weaving Red Skull thing, remember?
Oh, right. Fine. Where was it? The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about all kinds of gaggles of...
Aaron, could you cut it with the gaggles thing? It's not working for me.
All right. Fine. The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games.
Don't forget that we talk about, you know, Bruce Campbell and Christopher Lee, obviously.
Natalie Portman.
All right, guys! I'm trying to do a commercial for the Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games, tabletop gaming, all kinds of other geek stuff.
You mean that show we broadcast on Ustream?
Yes!
Wednesday, 8 Central Standard Time.
Right, at redphonezone.com. Now, can you guys just give me a minute to get this promo done?
Sure, sorry, dude.
Yeah.
All right, from the top. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone.
Aaron, we need a tiebreaker. Okay, who would win in a fight with Galactus?
Anti-Monitor.
Galactus and Anti-Monitor. Come on.
I think the more important question would be who would win in a fight between me and you two idiots.
Well, I guess we don't know what we're talking about.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.